Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, a couple of minutes in. Dr. Ducharme, in just a couple of minutes, we're actually going to get a quick visit in with Jill Byrne, and I wanted Jill to update everybody on where things are for later today. The Colonial card pushed back an hour, but they will run, and so we'll also find out from her how they're going to handle the races that were lost yesterday. But push everything back on your menu from 5:30 to 6:30, and we'll see if they're going to speed up post times, or you know how they're going to handle it. Although just run the whole card. It's the beauty of having lights. Just run the whole card, you know, later on, an hour, you know, basically seems to be practical. They've got a really nice card, too, for what would have been the second. And Jill Byrne joins us from Colonial. And Jill, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. And saw the news right as I was coming on air about pushing back an hour, the start time, and you talk about the conditions and the circumstances.
Yeah, well, you know, just obviously warm everywhere throughout the country. And after conferring with our veterinarians and the stewards and horsemen and our racing office, they all agreed, and Colonial Downs management all agreed, that we could push our post time back an hour and it would make a difference after looking at all the different weather apps. And if we could go to 6:30, that would make a difference in the weather. And so that was the decision that everybody was in support of, and we're just happy to be racing.
Excellent. And so everything will just basically be pushed back an hour. You're not going to move up
Yeah.
post times from now, there?
No, I mean, even, you know, we'll just move along as normal. And we do, you know, we don't have lights on our dirt course, so, but we schedule our dirt races early, and we still plenty of time with our dirt races to run. So we're in good shape, and everybody's happy to make that decision to be able to run. And you know, safety first is always number one for us with horses and horsemen and jockeys and our staff. And all of that was taken into consideration, and everybody was 100% in support.
Nice. Before we talk about the card and a couple of highlights, because the card itself needs to be brought out. How are you going to handle the races from yesterday and reincorporate them in mm-hmm. you know, in the next week or so, including the steeplechase action?
Yeah, we're actually taking entries today. We've rescheduled for Sunday. So Sunday we will be racing, and we're rescheduling all those races for Sunday. But, you know, they have to re-enter, so everybody is re-entry today, Tuesday for Sunday, including the steeplechase races. And so we'll have the steeplechase races first, followed by the regular flat card on Sunday with a post time. Steeplechase races post time will actually start at 3:30. We're going to add one additional steeplechase race so they can make up for two that they lost. And they'll go 3:34 and 4:30, but those are non-wagering races, not simulcast. But they will be live streamed on the National Steeplechase Association site. And then we'll go into our flat card.
Nice. Very nice. Well,
we work hard to accommodate everybody, but
yeah.
You know, it's important. So many people have been a big part of racing and returning to Virginia and supporting racing in Virginia. And, you know, to do the right thing by everybody, but always erring on the side of caution, safety, health and welfare, always number one priority. And we have a great team here with Colonial Downs Management, with our veterinarians, our stewards, our racing staff, and our horsemen's group is just phenomenal, you know, led by Frank Petromala. So everybody is involved, and, you know, we just try to do the right thing.
Well, the racing itself today and tomorrow, looking ahead, we got some stakes involved. We got some familiar names, too. And for those that haven't had a chance to look ahead at Colonial, tomorrow, mile and 3/16, first level allowance, and among the three-year-olds involved, Farmington Road shows up in here for Todd Pletcher. And that caught my eye right away. Today we've got the 2-year-old season, and a nice group of eight early on in the card. You've also got the Hansel today for Virginia Breds, and then tomorrow you come back with the Camptown and the Ned Evans.
Yeah, no, we've had some good racing and great support from horsemen all over the country and up and down the Mid-Atlantic, so really excited about that. Yeah, Farmington Road, I haven't had a chance to just dive into everything, but I'm sure he must have some sort of Virginia connections to him, because Farmington Road is a very famous road in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I'm from. So I'm sure there must be connections there to Virginia.
Well, interesting. We'll check with you know what. We'll have to check with Aaron Wellman and the team regarding Farmington Road's name origin. Today, nine race card, and all on the flat on the turf and on the main. The Hansel has got an 8 horse field. These are 2-year-olds that are Virginia bred, open company 2-year-olds earlier on the card. So 2-year-old racing in force. Boy, you got more 2-year-olds, it seems, down there than we've got up here.
Well, you know, everybody's been excited to get racing here, and giving the 2-year-olds an opportunity is very important. And people that come into the stable area, a lot of 2-year-olds, and our starting gate crew give them a lot of credit, you know, working nonstop to get these 2-year-olds gate carded and ready to go. So, you know, that's where it all begins, and look forward to seeing the babies out there.
Well, the action at Colonial, 6:30 tonight, but normally 5:30, and we'll speculate that they'll start tomorrow with the regular start time of 5:30, but want people to be aware, thoroughbred action into the evening, and tonight it'll go till about 10:15, based on the post times. 9:14 is the last post at 9, and Jason Beam in place and ready to call the action. Merv Huber to do a lot of the punditry work and the paddock commentary.
Yeah, those two are a great team and work well together. And they push out their video that they do previously ahead of time out on social media, and it's on our website as well. So looking forward to having them back, to having everybody, you know, TVG showing our races and TVG coverage. And, of course, everybody, you know, can wager on all ADWs out there, and Twin Spires, ExpressBet, NairaBet, TVG. I look forward to people being able to watch and wager on the races from Colonial for Colonial 2020.
Well, excited for you, Jill, and obviously, you know, unique circumstances, virtually every opening, and you know, yesterday, Presque Isle, and you know, we've been having these, you know, these introductions to kick off seasons around North America, and best wishes to everybody down there. If you haven't looked at the cards yet, it's a really nice mix. Virtually, you got horses up from you got them up from Florida, you got them down from all throughout the Mid Atlantic and New York, and second full season of action for Colonial Downs starting tonight, 6:30. Jill, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate all your support.
Not at all. And looking forward. And when you look at these cards, that tells you all you need to know about the action. And you know, I'm just pulling up for tomorrow. You look at this group. Going to go as the third race tomorrow. Mile and 3/16 on the outer turf. First level allowance. Singapore Flash, Mike Stidham, and this one coming off an allowance win at Laurel. I mentioned Farmington Road coming out of the Belmont, and pretty interesting. We talked to Linda Rice yesterday about Max Player. And here's Farmington Road, who is a quality road colt out of a Langfear mare, making the turf transition, coming in from Belmont. And Ty Connor's going to ride. Jay Beresford Tipton, the millionaire, Animal Kingdom Ridgeling, bred by Team Valor. And Arno Delacour handles, has been trying to clear the allowance condition. Winter's Wonder, Hernan Parra, and this one has been campaigned down in Florida, broke the maiden against Statebreds July 5th. Captain Hardship, Grand Motion. It gives you an idea of the variety of barns and from where all the horses are coming from. And Captain Hardship is a Lonro six-year-old gelding that seems like a bit of a distance, oriented type. Has been running a mile and three-eighths, mile and a quarter. And then Felix the Fox, of course, a name that jumps off, too, because that was Claude Ray McGahee, now with Tudyk's Farm. And Ron Potts is handling. And Suge had kind of transitioned him to turf, but it took until Tampa in June for him to break his maiden. And Ron Potts, he's kind of a horse that seems kind of one-paced. We had talked to Suge about him. Nice group tomorrow, and all eyes certainly on Farmington Roan. And then the two stakes, as mentioned, the Camptown as well as the Ned Evans. Speaking of great Virginia horsemen, the late Ned Evans. So there you go. We appreciate Jill visiting and are looking forward to Colonial being on the wagering menu starting tonight, 6:30. We're going to talk to Dr. Ducharme next. And Case, you can give him a try, I think. And our friend Leslie Knopf is reminding about the racing at Goodwood and tomorrow the Sussex, certainly going to be watched and looked toward. Today, you got the Gold Cup, which just ran, including Stradivarius and more. We'll talk to Dick. We'll talk to Dick Powell. I was looking earlier this morning at the action from Goodwood. So we'll check in after our visit with Dr. Ducharme. And it's an absolute pleasure to welcome Dr. Normand Ducharme back to At the Races after, I would say, Doc, this has got to be a 10 or 12-year hiatus. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you feeling?
We're good. I've been heralding your return to the show for months, and it was certainly given... it was given a boost, the opportunity to talk to you about the advancements and innovations in the tie-back surgery that you pioneered. At the time, anybody that was listening to us when I explained that one of our horses, Kid Chocolate, after already having to go through a ridgeling to gelding operation, then immediately comes back and he entraps, and next thing we know, we've got a breathing issue to deal with. And at the Ruffian Center, they said, Dr. Ducharme is going to be in town this week. He could maybe do the surgery. And if you want to wait, I said, yes, I will wait for Dr. Ducharme. And I couldn't have been happier to send you a win picture when he won last month at Belmont. Obviously a very successful performer coming out of your work. So thank you, first of all.
You're more than welcome. Good horses make surgeons look good.
Let's go back, because there's certainly a group of people that they hear about it if they're watching broadcasts, and you know, they read about tie-back surgery and breathing issues in horses, Doc. And they don't really know the differences. And of course, you know, there's myectomy, confusion about what, you know, kinds of things that are inhibiting the airway for horses. Talk about, the recent past when it comes to addressing horses' breathing issues. And then we'll talk about, you know, how things have advanced in really the last decade.
So the most common problem that the racehorse have is the paralyzed flapper, which is a decrease or loss of function of one of the arytenoid cartilage, which we term flapper in lay term. There's palate displacement, which is also a common problem. That latter problem causes a problem during exhalation, as opposed to, they can't get the airflow out of their lungs, as opposed to a paralyzed flapper where they cannot get the air into their lungs. And then entrapment's a less common form of obstruction, where there's a membrane that gets on top of the cartilage, the epiglottic cartilage. And what has made the a huge difference in the last, since 2008, is the ability to do dynamic or overground exam. So you can examine, do a scoping while the horse is running, to find out what it's doing under the condition of racing. The treadmill was a big improvement, but the overground for the airway was the recent is now the recent gold standard.
At what point in your own career and did this become a focus for you?
It came pretty early. I was a resident at Cornell in 1981-82, and I got interested in the throat. One of the surgeons here, Dr. Rick Hackett, was doing quite a few of them. And I got interested in there, and I remember a few of the surgeons here trying to discourage me to work on throats because there's only four diseases, and they'll be solved in the next few years, and you'll have nothing to do. Well, little did I know that 40 years later, we're still trying to figure out how to make things better and quicker, return to work and all those things, less problems.
The tie-back concept, what was being done before this innovation, before you figured out that this was an option?
Well, the tie-back was actually started in 1970 by a surgeon named veterinarian named Danny Marks. He's the one that started the tie-back, and the problems with the tie-back are many. One of them is you take a piece of cartilage or flapper and stick it in an open position so the horse can inhale as much air as possible. But when the horse swallows, then that flapper is still open and some horse can inhale a little feed, and so there's a percentage that coughs. Not a high percentage, but it's not zero. It's probably in the neighborhood of 10% that have some coughing associated with it. The other problem is we're suturing two pieces of cartilage, which is like chicken breast. It's not very strong materials, and so a bunch of sutures got tried over the years, from Lycra at the beginning to many, many other polyester and a bunch of other sutures. Deal to try to make it less likely to cut through the cartilage, but many of them, of the tie-back, probably the majority, do lose a grade after surgery because the suture cuts through partially and there's some settling and makes you lose part of the opening that you have. And so all surgeons really have been making small improvements to try to fix the problem of trying to keep it as high as you can and find out what as high as you can is really what's the upper limit safety-wise. And the other aspect is not make it fail or have the horse aspirating. And so the higher it is good if it stays there and if the horse does not inhale any feed particles. So those are all the conflicts that all of us are trying to solve. And so we try to look at it'd be nice if there was a dynamic way that we can have it open just when the horses are racing or running and close when they swallow. And in the last 10, 15 years, went through a slew of trying to figure out which part of the muscle causes the opening, what's the opening that we want. We needed some computer flow modeling to figure out, do you really need it open 100%, given that where the flapper is, it's about 13% higher than the windpipe, so why do you need to get it that high? And if you deal with a lower level, the forces that are applying, how could you reduce the forces? And so we did a series of experiments where titanium, although it could be a stainless steel button, is placed between the suture and the cartilage. Like, many people would have thought of that, or we should have thought of that years ago. Many of the improvements that the community has made through the years is, why didn't we think this of earlier? About 5 years ago, we figure out the button part on one cartilage, but we couldn't figure out the anchor on the other cartilage. You still had a suture going to solid part with a button and a weak part, which was through the cartilage. And we solved that recently by a couple method that basically is also a titanium alloy that goes like a rivet into the cartilage or a screw.
Hmm.
We also, and this was, I don't know if it was by chances, but, the draft horse have a lot of these problems. A thoroughbred racehorse, about prevalence of that is about 5%. In draft horses, it's approaching 50% of horses. So,
wow.
Was doing a ton of tieback. Still am on draft horses, and anesthetize a thoroughbred racehorse is it's not a minor thing, but it's not a life-threatening procedure. But in a horse that weighs a ton, it is. So we start doing them standing, and then it didn't take too long to figure out that's easier on the horses, plus the surgeon can do a better job doing it standing because you can adjust the position of the flapper a lot more accurately because the horse is in this normal position. There's no tube to provide oxygen and anesthetic gas going through the airway that you're trying to scope and figure out, this is a little higher than I wanted or a little lower than I wanted. So this doing it standing made a big difference. These modalities that prevents the suture from cutting through makes a big difference. We've been working as well in trying to make it a dynamic procedure, meaning that it opens at exercise preferentially. So 2018, we and others, it's always a team thing. It's not a single person. I work with surgeons in Europe and the U.S. and France, U.K., of course, design a way to transplant a nerve, which is a procedure from an ENT in Lyon, France, that this person's the world expert on human laryngeal reinnervation, because humans have the same problem or similar problem. The problem in human is it's bilateral. That makes it worse, but they're not racing. So that makes it better for them. They don't need it to open it as much. So we adapted the human procedure into horses, and now the latest innovation is to add the nerve transplant at the same time as the tieback, which would give it the extra kick during maximum exercise and minimize the complication. All done standing as an approach, and with these metal parts or titanium parts, make the failure rate lower. And there's things that are buried into the history, like you never do a tieback on a horse that is not completely paralyzed. I've written that in chapters in the 90s. And then we looked at the horses we had done tiebacks on, and those that were partially paralyzed and we had done tieback did much better than the horse that were completely paralyzed when we did the tieback. And so that was completely opposite than we thought. And then we figure out, well, horse that doesn't get proper oxygen and keeps training and racing, well, some of these horses learn that this is not fun. This hurts to run out of, every time I go out there, I run out of oxygen. So there's a mental impact, which is really hard to measure, but I believe it is true, and I believe it's true by listening to the trainers that are very attuned to their horse and say, this horse head is not in it anymore. I can't train him as well. So there's a mental impact on it. There's a mechanical impact if you're working on a restricted airway because of a paralyzed flapper or a displaced palate, then their lungs has to develop a lot more negative pressures or positive pressure. That caused pulmonary damage. And, of course, they can develop orthopedic problem because they're more tired when they get in the last furlong because they're not getting as much oxygen. You can have more breakdown. Those are hard to see, but I do see a horse with some airway problem that have condylar fracture, and you wonder how much of it is because they're not breathing. Now, it's not the majority of horse for sure, but it's some horses. And so things have changed as we tell the people, don't wait that the horse is fully paralyzed to do surgery. If he's obstructed, we should be able to help him. And with the newer technology where we can fight the cycling pressure, we can go ahead and do the surgery. They go back to work earlier. When I started, they used to go back to work at around 2 months. Now they go back to work at 4 weeks. Some horse, because of business decision, go back to work at 2 weeks. We're also trying to shorten the time that they're off. There's a relation with horse breakdown and how long their layoff period is before they go back to work. So you're sort of looking at all aspects of the horse's career, athletic training and so forth, as we adapt our procedure to the horses and to the trainers and owners' needs.
Dr. Normand Ducharme is with us from Cornell, and generally acknowledged as the premier expert on the tieback work. How much does it cost, and how has that changed over the years? Is it that much faster? Including you mentioned the doing the work on a sedated standing horse has got to aid recovery time too. If a horse is not completely put under.
Right. It helps some of the pain and soreness associated with the recovery from anesthesia. We've had horses that were trying to get to the Olympic, and 3-4 weeks before the Olympic is a bad time to lay them down to sleep, to do whatever throat procedure needs to. And so the standing does help them recover. General anesthesia on horses is a pretty safe procedure, but the odd horse gets up and have a cut or have a little chip on the back of the knee. You know, there are some problem with jaw anesthesia, but it's relatively safe. You know, if your horse needs to be anesthetized for whatever procedure, the odds are way overwhelming that you'll be fine. But there are some small risks, and, you know, you keep chopping at removing as many risks as possible.
What innovations have you seen? You sort of referenced a couple, and in terms of diagnosis, we were talking separately, and one thing that it seems is being advanced and utilized is trying to get out ahead of this while the horse is as young as possible, and the earliest possible identification of a racehorse that may, you know, may be a candidate and may run into this problem as training, you know, evolves and as they get, you know, closer to the racetrack, whether they're being, you know, started and broken and you know, then, you know, put into training as a, you know, late in the yearling season, early two-year-old. How do we even identify these horses and what, you know, what have you done in that regard?
Well, the trainers are very attuned to noticing that the horse is not quite right, even at lower speed. And, of course, it depends how severely affected the horses are. And the vets are, you know, the equipment's much better now. Many vets have video endoscopic image where you could see high-def image of the throat. So they identify earlier, and you don't do a tieback on very young two-year-old, you try to do a nerve transplant, you know, or certainly a yearling, because the cartilage is very soft and the horse is not mature yet. So the earlier horses will get in a group of treatment that's a little tailored for them. But it's tied to, you know, the standard trainers noticing that this horse is not doing what he should, or his head is not into it, or he's resisting some of the training. Noise is the most common thing. They realize it's an abnormal noise going on. And then the dynamic exam, this ability to put a scope up the horse's nose and gallop him and see what's going on, plays a role. We've developed laryngeal ultrasound. I think it was 2006 when we published that. And so that allows you to assess more precisely the level of disease into the muscle that controls the airway. And so all those modality adding to the trainer and noticing that something or detecting that something is not quite right, then they usually know right away that's the airway. So video scopes, better overground scope, laryngeal ultrasound, all that allows earlier detection of disease and also gradation of how severe it is and how mild it is. So some horses are able to do okay mild disease if they're able to open, 80% of the way or whatever the native function, and if they're running shorter and so forth.
A couple of things out of that, actually. The identification, one thing that I know from, you know, particularly the two-year-old in training sale, Bree show, and, the people that are watching and you know, essentially they're there with the stopwatch to do the the timing, but they're also listening and very frequently in notations, you know, you'll read or some, you'll hear someone say, you know, making noises and that that's an alarm bell. And we also hear the reference to roarers, horses, you know, roaring, Is that always an indication that a breathing problem arises, or are there some horses that make that noise and it's not and they're not going to have a problem?
Yeah, so you could have. So the fact that there's a noise means something is abnormal. So it's not necessarily obstructive, yes, but it means that something's abnormal. So the vocal cord is starting to sag into the airway, and the airway is not normal in shape or size or geometry. So that's what the noise tells you. Now, the horse may have abnormal noise, but not yet be obstructive, or not, and certainly in the two-year-old in training, you know, they're going such short distance that some of the horses with milder form won't have any effect. And then and some of the horses with the mildest form are able to go 5, 6, 7 furlongs without, they're making a noise, but the performance is still okay. But as time goes on, they can't go past 3-8, or they can't close even the shorter races. And, you know, they fade or tired, as they typically are referred to.
Dr. Ducharme, I knew this was going to happen. You're provoking all kinds of ideas for me to ask as follow-ups. One of the other things that you see at the yearling sales as well, the horseman reaching in underneath the head, checking the throat and the width of the passageway, essentially trying to. I know that some people have a measurement of the width of the fist. A nice wide throat. Talk about the physiology and how much of this over the years, if this study's even been done, how much of this is potentially hereditary and comes from the parentage.
Well, the there's different diseases there. The width of the mandible and the fist is the typical area. Hasn't been, it's something that most of us think it's true, but has no scientific data to support it. And it affects really the diameter of the nasal pharynx, which is in front of the voice box or larynx. And that diameter, the more narrow it is, the more it increases resistance when the horses inhale, and can cause collapse to the flapper or other structure or palate. So it's logical, but has no correlation. And there's other things that we palpate, like the space between the voice box and the cartilage. We also have no correlation with it. But we also palpate how much muscle is present in the voice box. And if there is lack of muscle, then you can detect it by palpation if it's advanced enough, and that definitely would correlate with lack of function. And there are some good ultrasound, CT base, and histopath correlating the size of the muscle to its power and ability to stays open, as well as to the number of axons, which are the sort of nerve bundle within the main nerve that goes to the voice box. So some of them are historical, probably true, but has no control data, and some does have control data, which is the size of the muscle, although it's more based on ultrasound because it's more accurate than the fingers, but I certainly believe I could tell when a horse has disease on palpation, but I probably am missing those that have very mild disease.
This is, this is an area that is, it feels so mysterious, but obviously there couldn't be anything really more important to you know, the success of anybody's racehorse. I mean, the amount of oxygen that a horse is going to take, it just integral to, you know, just how much they can exert themselves, and, you know, being able to identify this. One thing that is amazing, and I'll refer back actually, Doc, to Kid Chocolate. He had not made any noises. He had never had any indication, had never, you know, kind of worked out or run in a race where suddenly he stopped. And you know, so there's certain things that you look for in performance as you know, a potential indice that, you know, that the horse is having a breathing issue. And It all of a sudden it cropped up. How normal or unusual is that? That you know, the first time anybody encounters it as a horseman is, you know, that it happens in a race, and all of a sudden the horse just backs up, and when you go to check, you realize what's transpired, that you know, that he's lost his air.
Well, the airways, so abnormal noise is an indication that there's a problem to the geometry of the airway, not necessarily obstruction. But there's a percentage of horses that are silently obstructed, and it's probably in the 10 to 20% of horses.
Wow.
And so not making a noise doesn't mean that everything is okay. And so percentage is probably 20% for horse that or displacer or flip their pallet, and it's slower with horses with paralyzed flapper. A smaller percentage are quiet, but they're known. These silent displacer or silently obstructed horses, there's a percentage of them that nobody has heard the noise, and I've had them on the treadmill where I could see they're obstructed. I've got a scope up there, and I can't hear anything. That does happen, and it has to do with the frequency that some of the tissue are vibrating. So if they're vibrating at the respiratory frequency, which is 2 hertz, they don't make a noise. You and I wouldn't hear it. But if they're vibrating at 80, 90 hertz, then you can hear it. And so so there are some biological or individual variation in the elasticity of the tissue that could make a horse silent yet obstructed.
I'll give you one more follow-up, and I've already kept you longer than we expected, but very frequently horses can present performance issues that are anxiety driven, and whether it's, you know, horses that are you know, shipped, horses are creatures of real habit and don't necessarily like their routine and their atmosphere changed, and you know, their success in a lot of cases, you know, as at the highest levels, involves their ability to adapt and deal with the van and the plane and you know, a variety of circumstances. Is there any indication that some of this can be stress related when it comes to breathing issues?
Yes, but there's no proof of it. But there's no question that some diseases are more frequently seen on a very nervous animal, more so the palate, though.
Okay.
Palate displacement rather than flapper. Because the flapper is, you know, there's about 8,000 axon going to the nerve, and once they die off and there's only 2,000, the flapper will go down regardless about how nervous the horse is or isn't. But the palate itself is related to other factors. Some of it is fatigue, some of it is neuromuscular control. So, yes, that is true for palate. I believe it to be true. I don't know, I have evidence-based data, though. But I don't believe it to be true for roaring or laryngeal hemiplegia.
Dr. Normand Ducharme from Cornell, and of course the Cornell Ruffian Hospital across from Belmont has been a wonderful addition to the landscape for New York horsemen and stakeholders, and of course the work at you know, the vet program at Cornell, as good as there is anywhere. And Dr. Ducharme, before we go, anything, you got anything to promote? Things that you suggest that horse owners, fans, players, charity to support that helps your work, that helps that forwards the work of research community and those that are looking to help the performance of horses?
Yes, there's we're always looking for support to help us in our research or clinical trials, because we never settle that this is good enough. You always try to get better or do better for the horse in terms of less complication, quicker return, minimally invasive. All those things require funding and a team. It's not an individual. There's a group of people that make any team work. And so, any listener that's willing to support Cornell University and the Cornell Ruffian Equine Specialist Clinic, that would help us pursue our goals to make the horse better. And us throat surgeon would like to remind everyone that it's the horse's throat that crosses the finish line the first, not the legs. But of course, orthopedic problems are very common as well.
Well, Dr. Ducharme, absolute pleasure to visit with you again. It's been way too long, and I can't thank you again enough for what you did for our horse. And there's so many listening that you undoubtedly have helped in their careers. And on that topic, what horse out there are you proudest of that has accomplished, the most that's gone through this?
Well, I have some non-disclosure agreement that prevents.
All right.
But we'd like to think we've helped a horse or two across over the years.
Well, we will recommend to everybody vet.cornell.edu/giving. I'll send out the link if you want to support Doc's work and of course, many different, the Grayson Jockey Club Foundation as well provides grants along these lines. But we absolutely are in awe of what Dr. Ducharme has done for horses. And his name is synonymous with helping horses perform at their highest level. Normand, thank you so much. Continued success. And I hope I don't have to talk to you anytime soon.
Okay, well, thank you, and thanks for having me on.
Not at all. Dr. Normand Ducharme, who has advanced the tie-back surgery in particular and nerve work as well, nerve transplant work in horses. And I couldn't have been, more delighted. And I felt so assured, and I think it helped me assure partners, that we were in the best of hands when this cropped up in, I guess it was February, I think February. I'd have to look at Kid Chocolate's. He came back from the Ridgeling surgery. He had this giant testicle that was AWOL, and they discovered it in his abdomen. And as soon as we got back from that, he goes and you get him back going and he starts. And Gary calls me. He says, "You're not going to believe this." Oh boy! Sure enough. So, but when Cornell, when they called from the Ruffian, they said, "Dr. Ducharme's available on Thursday if you want to wait a couple of days." I said, "Yes, I'll wait a couple of days." It couldn't have been in better hands. We'll take a timeout. Top of the hour upon us. Andy Serling. We'll check in with Andy. Look back at the weekend. Look ahead to the Whitney and more coming up this weekend and this week, Saratoga. Jay Privman's going to join us at the bottom of the hour as well, by the way. And Jay, with the details I talked about at the start of the show regarding the Del Mar Sunday pick six. And Jay, you know, reported on it as soon as the, you know, the murky and odd elements became apparent. And we're also going to use Jay's proximity to John Kelly, who died over the weekend as well. A big name around the game for many, many, many years, particularly Del Mar. Time out here. Andy Serling, Hour 3, when we come back.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Sirius XM Sports.